Now, in lecture one, I told you that Joy Gresham was a Jewish American who, after years of atheism and communism, came to faith in Christ partly through Lewis's works. Now, let me tell you the whole story of their courtship and marriage. Well, early in the 50s, the two began to correspond with each other. She was an American, remember. Then, in 1952, Joy visited C.S. Lewis. She visited England, and she also visited C.S. Lewis at the time. By the way, Lewis wrote Surprised by Joy before he met Joy Gresham. It's a wonderful irony that he married a woman named Joy after writing Surprised by Joy, but it's just a coincidence, or maybe a divine coincidence. Anyway, 2 years later, in 1954, Joy was divorced from her husband. And her husband was continually unfaithful. He was an alcoholic, and she tried everything she could to preserve the marriage, but there was nothing to do. She finally had to leave. She took her two children, David and Douglas, and moved to England, she hoped permanently, to start a new life. She continued to be friends with Lewis. Lewis helped her financially, usually quietly, as he always did, and things went well. But then, a few years later, when her British visa, or whatever the Britons call it, was running out, she had to go back home to America. Well, she didn't want to go home, and she appealed to Lewis. And do you know what Lewis actually did? In 1956, he married Joy in a civil ceremony in order to share his British citizenship with her. But after they got married civilly, they lived apart. In other words, it's not a real marriage. He just did it to help. And many people have done this in America to help people live in America so they wouldn't have to go back to an oppressive regime or something like that. Well, Lewis did this for her out of friendship. But then, shortly after, Joy developed cancer. And it was a bad case of cancer. And when that happened, and maybe partly because Lewis's mother died of cancer, but whatever, Lewis then realized that he really did love Joy, and the two were married in an ecclesiastical ceremony at her deathbed, right in the hospital. By the way, if you get a chance, see the movie Shadowlands with Anthony Hopkins. That movie tells pretty accurately the story that I'm telling you here. It's a wonderful movie, well worth seeing, directed by Richard Attenborough, who directed Gandhi. It's a good movie. Anyway, after that, everybody thought that Joy would die very shortly. But miraculously, and it was a miracle, her cancer went into remission, and the two lived in marriage as husband and wife for 3 years. Now, unfortunately, there's a sad part. Most of Lewis's friends did not approve of this American divorcee. They didn't like the fact that she was American, that she was loud. There might have been a little anti-Semitism in there, but they didn't like her. And it really hurt C.S. Lewis. Tolkien did not like her at all. But Joy and C.S. Lewis were the greatest husband and wife. They spent 3 marvelously happy years together. Years that sounded the depths of affection, friendship, eros, and charity. He felt all. And the two even got to go on a brief trip to Greece before she really got sick again. And they lived, and it would have been wonderful to go visit their house because they were a crazy couple. Now, Joy was not really very beautiful, and she wasn't even very refined. She was like Orwell. Not a bad person, but she was a little bit gruff. She was an American and kind of tough. But Lewis loved her, and he loved particularly her quick wit. He loved to have verbal, battles with her. He loved it. In fact, he says of Joy that her mind was lithe and quick and muscular as a leopard, ever ready to crush sloppy thinking. It's almost like Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn or something. They were sparring partners, and they loved it. Lewis just ate it up. It would be so much fun to go to dinner with them. Well, unfortunately, in 1960, the cancer returned and Joy died. Lewis was absolutely devastated, as I told you, and as a way of dealing with his grief, he began to keep a journal of what he was feeling. Well, after a year or so, he realized he'd filled up 4 journal books, and so he decided to publish them in book form as A Grief Observed. It was published in 1961, anonymously at first. Later on, Lewis put his name on it. And it did pretty well, obviously did better when he put his name on it. But even anonymously, people read it. Now, I want to say that other than Tennyson's In Memoriam, I don't think any other work has dealt so honestly and directly with the doubts and fears that assail the griever, even and especially if he is a strong Christian. And one of the reasons the book is so good, it's very, very small, it's so good is because most modern Christians, if they did this, before they published it, they would have gone back to the beginning of the book and made it seem a little less doubting, a little less despairing, a little more Christian. Lewis did not do that. He left it as it was. Maybe he fixed the grammar, but he did not make himself sound more faithful or believing in the beginning. In fact, a lot of strong conservative Christians are really bothered when they read this. Because at the beginning, it almost sounds like Lewis has lost his faith. They ask himself, is this Lewis the great apologist? How can a man like that suffer from such terrible doubts? Here's the great apologist. Well, suffer Lewis does. But he doesn't doubt whether God exists. Rather, more terribly, he begins to wonder if God is not a cosmic sadist, an eternal vivisector playing with his human rats. The question is not whether God exists. Lewis said he might as well believe he doesn't exist. The question is, what kind of God is he? Well, as you can see, gone is the cool logic of the problem of pain. Lewis cries out to God, why did you pull me out of my long bachelorhood? He was in his 50s when he married Joy. Why did you pull me out of that only to send me back into a shell again? Is our marriage just to be a brief, forgotten episode? And again he asks, why can't I see Joy's face? He can't even remember her face. Why, he says, God, when I most need you, do I hear the door slammed in my face and the sound of bolting and double bolting?